lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you a ripe one, don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them is a culinary bug.
Well, friends, it's Thursday afternoon. That means it's time for In the Garden. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. With Master Gardener Ed Bajarski coming to us by phone from up near Juneau. And we want to say thank you to the Flower Farm. They support this program and your local radio station here, and they are busting out with colorful flowers, dahlias, and lots more to brighten your day. And they can provide subscriptions for bouquets delivered. And they've got perennials, trees, shrubs, dirt, mulching, and bark, and lots of good stuff. And they invite you to visit their greenhouses down there at 6 Rory Road, Papke's Landing. They're open every day but Wednesday, 772-3464. That's the Flower Farm. What will life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes. All right, and we've got Master Gardener Ed Bajarski on the line here. Hello there, Ed.
Hey there, Oren. What a great day, great few days we're having here. Dry weather with that, I don't know, that bright stuff in the sky that was so familiar, unfamiliar last month. It's forecast is looking really good for some days of it.
Isn't it? Oh, boy. I remember the first day, a few days back, when the forecast really changed and it just was smooth sailing after that. You know, it was like a heavy blanket lifted off my heart.
Hey, summer finally arrived.
It did. Yep, so that feels good. And I'm sure the plants are loving it. You know, they're making their moves, you know.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, stuff is growing and thriving. I still haven't dug any potatoes yet, but the garlic harvest is... I'm about halfway through my garlic harvest, and I did, though I did advise people about early harvesting, I think that's now 2 weeks ago, I started some, but I left some in the hopes that we would get some dry weather, and the stems were still, the lower leaves are still very green.
Right.
I'm really glad I did, because that has resulted in considerable growth. You know, I've been harvesting kind of gradually every couple of days more and more, but it is definitely getting bigger. It is looking good at this point. So there will be lots of garlic available, and I know that Bo and Maria, I saw some pictures of some of theirs that look beautiful down there. It's so wonderful. I mean, my furnace room and my garage are just reeking of garlic. You know, it's wonderful.
Yeah, that's just beautiful, boy. Well, I'm glad. I'm so grateful that, especially for the garlic harvest, we've had this nice little dry streak here, and may it continue for a little while longer yet. But really to just get some final significant growth in for these.
Right. I was hoping for having to water stuff, something or other, and now we are. So that's something for folks to look at. Certainly watch their... We haven't needed water last month much, but hanging baskets right now, and if you've got a lot of container gardens, that too, you've got to watch them. It's supposed to get really hot this weekend. So you've got to watch that and keep track of that. And when you're watering some of those, because we had so much rain back in... July, and we, I don't know about you guys, but we were, I guess, 10th wettest. We had 7 inches here for the month. And that leaches out a lot of nutrients out of the soil. So particular for those hanging baskets and potted stuff, you know, those can use a dose of some liquid fertilizer would be good. The stuff that's in the ground, unless you've got new actively growing stuff, isn't going to need a whole lot at this point. But I figured we could talk about what we can be planting now, because I am in fact, I've got seeds in my pocket to put into the ground for a late summer and fall harvest, and possibly even some overwintering stuff.
Yeah, I mean, this is a good time to do just that. What are you putting in now? Are you doing more kale and things like that?
Yes. So a couple weeks back, I recommended planting kale and lettuce, and I did, and it's looking good. The stuff is 1 inch to 2 inches tall. Mm-hmm. And the early crop lettuce is absolutely magnificent now, but I've talked to other folks who do have it bolting. Mm-hmm. So that stuff, use it up. As it bolts, the lettuce at least usually tends to get rather bitter. Mm-hmm. So it's worth, some people like the more bitter lettuce, but, you know, tear off whatever leaves, harvest the last of that, and get it out of the ground. Mm-hmm. Cauliflower and broccoli, cauliflower at least, you know, harvest one head and pull those plants out, because they won't give you more, where the broccoli, at least, you harvest the main head and you get side shoots from those. Mm-hmm. And I've got some little broccoli starts, I don't know... They're kind of small, so I don't know if I'm going to manage to get broccoli from those this fall, but I was harvesting some in early December, the last of it, of that second crop of planting that went into beds, boxes, after the garlic came out.
Well,
but other things to plant, yeah, kale certainly. Then there's various different kinds of kale. The challenging part may be just finding seeds, if there's any available in town, if you don't have leftover seeds from your spring planting. But the different mustard greens and bok choy and Chinese cabbages, if they're again, check the labels. If it says like 50 days or less, that would work fairly well. And they like the cool temperatures, and they, along with the lettuce and spinach, can be planted, and radishes. Mm-hmm. So they will be maturing as the days are getting shorter, so they are unlikely to bolt. And most all of those are cool weather tolerant.
Right.
So that's a plus. However, it is worthwhile if you're planting some of these, still giving them, you know, making a little plastic shelter over them so you mm-hmm. can control the moisture levels, particularly later once the, you know, usually the September rains start.
Right.
And if we can keep the leaves drier, then they're less likely to get moldy mm-hmm. and, you know, stay healthier.
Yeah. Well, and I might give a little shout-out, too. If anybody is wanting to do kale, and I have some kale seeds left over, and on our community garden tour, we start at the community garden. That's where we all meet up, and I know that they probably have quite a lot of kale seed on hand. I know last year they were saving a lot of kale seeds from the kale plants in the community garden because they're really great and... abundant seeds. So if anybody out there is listening and they want to do a fall planting.
Easy to say, right, you know, watch those seed pods forming. They're green. I've got one plant of kale that has gone to seed, flower and seed, that we ate and ate and ate from that overwintered.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at the quantity of pods that are there, I may get a cup of seeds mm-hmm. from them.
Mm-hmm.
So they are prolific, and of course, if I don't get them all out and some of them sprinkle out on the ground, then I'll have kale growing there forevermore.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah. How does it work with kale again? It's the second year that it produces seeds. Is that
normally,
right?
Yes. You know, we're unlike like broccoli. Compare the others in the cabbage family. Some of them need to overwinter and get the, you know, get the long days and then the short days and then the longer lengthening days again the second summer mm-hmm. for them to get the signal to flower and bolt. Where with something like broccoli, well, usually that will bolt in the same season.
Mm-hmm.
And you could save seeds from those. And the thing to remember with saving seeds is that generally you want to save seeds from open pollinated plants mm-hmm. and not hybrid plants. Because the hybrids, you take, or the scientists, somebody else, the breeders, took two different varieties of broccoli, say, or tomatoes or whatever, mm-hmm. and bred, you know, put them together so they would cross and get hopefully a better variety. Well, because then seeds may very well form on those plants, but they are going to be an interesting mixture of genes.
Mm-hmm.
You may actually have, from what you plant then, that you may have multiple different varieties sprouting from those seeds.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, if you're saving open pollinated stuff, like this red Russian kale I was saving since, like, we just saw some over in Sitka at the Russian Bishop's house where mm-hmm. I was volunteer gardener back in 1991 and 92, and they're still growing kale, red Russian kale over there.
Cool.
Maybe not from my seeds, but that's where it all started, for me at least, going back in the summer of 92 and getting seeds from that, and that same batch, same genetics anyway, has been going and going ever since.
Wow. That is awesome.
Yeah. You know, and again, it's nice. It's a nice, easy plant to grow, and it's tasty. Mm-hmm. I mean, that variety for me is the tasty. That we've tried. In fact, we're doing some more kale variety experiments out at our community garden here.
Mm.
But again, it's got nice flavor. It's hearty for overwintering, and whether you're eating it fresh or chopping it, cooking it, sautéing it, whatever you do, kale soup and all that, it's great variety.
Yeah, I think Red Russian is my favorite. It's just a tight. It's a just a little bit more tender, and so it makes a better salad. I think, you know.
Right. Usually on the salad bars in restaurants, usually they have some of the Scotch kale or curly kales that are they're more durable. They hold up on the they last longer there. Where once you pick it, you've got to eat the Red Russian stuff. Although you can, it'll stay in the refrigerator bag for a few days at least.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yum. Well, okay. So you're planting kale today, you think?
I don't know about the kale, but like I said, in my pockets are radishes and spinach, and a few other odds and ends, and I've got some bok choy, some baby bok choy that I've grown in the past that is really nice stuff. Mm. Great for sautéing or, again, whatever. It all gets tossed into the salads. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, we're eating, so we can't hardly eat the salad fast enough, so I'm going to be sending some home with a friend here who's helping with the venison butchering, along with some garlic and stuff to give him a well-balanced diet.
Yeah, there you go. Well, that's true. That's a good point, too. You know, this time of year, the gardeners and the food providers in our families and communities, have lots of opportunities to create balanced nutrition from the land, you know?
Well, land and the sea, yeah. I guess salmon and halibut and all the other goodies that are coming back.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully this weekend get some salmon for the freezer, and it'll be, that's what we're working toward. I'm working toward, certainly, for freezer and root cellar and the garden as long as it lasts.
Mm-hmm.
And then we share with a whole bunch of folks, as well as shipping or taking care packages to our kids who are down in California, you know. So that's always worthwhile. So if you do have more than you need, you know, if there's some place locally there where you can share it with other folks, if your neighbors have gotten as much salad as you can give them, and they say no more. Finally, around here, though, even zucchini can be given away without people locking their doors and dropping their shades when they see you coming. No, because it isn't as I planted. We're finally, we had one zucchini last week. I've got a nice one. I've got to harvest tonight.
Yeah.
And but I actually planted 6 zucchini plants, which is usually 5 too many. but again, things were slow. They are coming on, however. So we'll see if it becomes too many at some point.
Yeah, I hope the weather is such that you end up with too many zucchinis. But yeah I know what you mean. On a sunny summer, those pups get pretty big.
They can. Yeah, you got to keep on them and don't let them get carried away. I actually still have one in my pantry, a big one left over from last year. So it's something I should try, probably butcher that one and get the seeds if the seeds mature. I mean, it's hard like a winter squash, and it's kept perfectly on the shelf in there. It's more of a curiosity, I suppose, at this point. But hard to say whether it's edible or not. But yeah, if we can get seeds from that, again, it's hard to say whether it's going to be a hybrid or not. Although last year I only had one variety, I don't know whether chances are it could be that it's a hybrid, but I don't know.
Mm.
So if I plant seeds next year, then I'll find out what I get.
Right. Yeah, interesting. Yeah, that's something to consider, the whole seed saving. You want to be careful to have what do you call them, heirloom seeds? Or?
Well, open-pollinated, which may be heirloom. Yes, I mean, the heirloom seeds are open-pollinated, kind of, you know, the one goes with the other, mm-hmm. because they've been kept going, like the red Russian kale has been kept going for, oh, I don't know, you know, 50 years, 100 years, maybe more. Mm-hmm. And so those have been, and they've, what has happened with the either breeders or farmers or just gardeners who are selecting, and they're selecting for consistency too. So if you're looking at, say you're doing this, you know, getting kind of serious about seed growing plants for seed production, whether you might have a little seed business, and I actually know some folks in Haines who are doing exactly that. You want to be looking, you look down a row of, say, 50 kale plants that you're hoping to will go to seed, or cucumbers, or squash, or whatever it is that you're saving. And you want to look for those, at least, to be uniform from one to the next. So if you've got this, you know, you see an odd plant that's growing, well, not the way you want it to, at any rate, you'd want to pull those out, or rogue them out, as they say. Mm. Get them out of the rows so they don't, you know, it's different genetics.
Right.
So if you want to stabilize the genetics, you've got to do some careful selection.
It's
our own unnatural selection, I guess.
Right, right. Yeah, kind of leading the course of natural selection in a
right.
in a way that we prefer.
Right. So the birds and the bees do the pollinating the way we want them to if you're not hand-pollinating, which you can do. Right. It's easy, pretty easy to do with squash because they've got great big flowers. And I'm actually doing that just to help them along, like in my greenhouses where I can't be sure that I'm getting enough bees and flies and other stuff in there. So I'll take the male flower and from the squash and take it over to tear the outer petals off, mm-hmm. and then take it over to the female flowers and actually hand pollinate those just to improve the odds that I'm going to get zucchinis.
Yeah, yeah, yep. Yeah, sometimes you have to, you know. Well, and it's just a good practice if you really want to ensure produce, you know, for some.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. If you've got a tight, you know, if you've got a tight greenhouse, mine is not. I mean, mine, the doors are open. I'm suspecting today it may be pushing 100 degrees in there. That's fine. The tomatoes have been and cucumbers have been waiting for that. Last week we were getting highs in the, you know, 68 to 70 degrees in the greenhouse, which is not really making the tomatoes are growing well. There are lots of green tomatoes. Cucumbers less enthusiastic.
Right.
They wanted more heat. So some of them are pretty stunted at any rate. So they're going to come out. Something else is going to get planted in there.
Yeah. Yeah, if they get stunted to a certain point, a hot streak like we're having, it's too late for that, do you think? Or?
Very often, yes. Mm-hmm. You know, if they haven't gotten... So, yeah, I've got two different varieties of cucumbers. One batch, growing great, you know, doing really well. They're one of the spined slicing cucumbers. Mm. And unfortunately, I can't tell you the name of them offhand. And the other one, on the other side, is one of these smooth-skinned European-type cucumber. And so those are the ones that are stunted. I mean, literally 4 to 6 inches tall. Hmm. So they're not going to make it. I mean, there are some tiny little cucumbers on them. They're about an inch long, and that's... But whether they're going to grow anymore, well, we'll eat them. I mean, these little tiny cucumbers, we'll toss them in the salad. We'll eat them.
Those could be cool little pickles.
Yeah, right. Well, what I found with those particularly, they just don't... they don't pickle well. Those European type with the smooth skins,
yeah.
They don't. You don't get a crisp pickle with those. Rather than where the standard slicers, like the normal ones you get in the store, and they've got little spines on them. Mm-hmm. Those are fine for pickling. You know, at a small size or bigger if for later.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Well, that's too bad for them, I suppose.
Yep, just got to eat them. You know, if you got too many, like I said, eat them or give them away.
Yeah.
But basically, that was end of the season when I'm cleaning up. And end of the season for cucumbers comes a lot sooner. Again, when the temperatures drop down, they just stop growing.
Right.
And they start to get mildew really bad, no matter what you do, if you don't have a heated greenhouse and stuff. So I just, you know, pull the plants off, remove all the whatever leftover cucumbers there are. And like I said, some of them do get pickled. that way, and that's nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's good to know the timing then of kind of how your community of plants are coming and going, sort of as far as optimal timelines. Cucumbers going to be finished. Are they the earliest thing that's finished off in the whole greenhouse?
Well,
do you think?
Yeah, I think so. Again, just depending on your own conditions in your own greenhouse. Yes, I mean the tomatoes are tough. I mean, it's surprising how long they last. Again, I've had tomatoes still out there, and as long as we don't get a real hard freeze, then they will be out there. They slow down. They don't grow much. And we'll talk about what we can do, and probably by the end of the month, kind of doing some clipping to encourage the tomatoes that we have to ripen. But they will hang on there into November, and I've done that, and then finally pick them all, and then they ripen into December or beyond, even into January sometimes. We've got. So it may be that way this year. We'll see. I mean, here the timing... Outdoors plants, even my raspberries, we've picked a handful of raspberries so far.
Oof.
And so they're 2 weeks late.
Yeah.
At least 2 to 3 weeks late comparatively. Last year, this time, we were already starting to pick a few blackberries. I don't know when that's going to happen. You know, so the raspberries, at least I know, they're getting bigger. You know, they are expanding. I may end up having to put some sort of a shelter over the raspberries so they ripen if. Or when the rain returns, just because they rot so easily.
Yeah.
But again, you know, you kind of keep track of some of this stuff. We're watching the wild berries, the red huckleberries, and the blueberries and blue huckleberries ripening. We've got to get out and pick more. We've got some picked. But.
Yeah, they're just now starting. Well, I mean, for a little while now, they've been finally arriving, but certainly took their time this year.
Right, and again, this kind of weather is going to improve the, well, it's going to improve the flavor. The sunshine shining on the fruits is going to increase your sugar content and will improve the flavor a lot. Here, too, pie cherries are ripening, so to the point where we can actually start picking pie cherries. And if we get a little bit of a, we're supposed to have this dry spell so that we can pick the pie cherries as they ripen, because if it rains hard, they will crack, and then once they crack, again, the fungus gets into them, and they will turn rotten very quickly.
Right.
So, again, there's a whole lot of things we need to do to take advantage of the sunshine, as I'm sure the plants are doing the same.
Exactly. Well, I have a caller on the line for us, so I'm going to tap him in here, and we'll see what this caller has. Hello there, caller. You're on with Master Gardener Ed Bajarski.
Hi, Ed. Hi, Orin. This is Craig Olson.
Hey there.
And I've got
a
question about planting trees. And some people tell me to plant trees this time of year so they have a little chance to acclimatize before winter. And other people are saying to wait until they die back and they've lost all their sap and then to plant them later in the fall.
Okay, either one works, so I'll ask a few more questions. Is this a tree that's been in a pot and has been well-rooted, and hopefully you probably haven't had to water it too much lately, but is this a potted tree?
No, this one's actually growing in the soil, and they want to move it.
Okay, in that case, then, yes, I would generally wait until later on, until they start to go dormant. And that way then, because if you wait till it goes dormant, leaves drop, then the nutrients from those leaves, or at least even start to turn color is fine. If the leaves are turning color, the tree is going dormant, and the nutrients are being stored in the roots, which is where you want it. Where if you go to dig that tree up now, unless you're very careful, dig a big, dig well away from it and get all the roots. It's hard. You're going to be damaging roots anyway. But the shock of that is likely to cause the leaves to, well, certainly you don't want to do it in this hot, sunny weather. You know, wait till the cloudy, gloomy, dreary stuff. And if it's raining, that's better for the tree, if not for the tree planter, perhaps. that would be my advice if you can, unless you have to move it because it's in the way of a construction project or something like that, or the excavator is bearing down on it, get it out of there. Or, but again, yeah, the more root system you can get, the better for the move. And later on for an in-the-ground tree, now that you're moving somewhere else, is also better.
Okay, and then for trees that are in pots, they can be planted now, though.
Oh, yes, absolutely. The thing with those is, look, when you pull them out of the pot, if they've been in that pot for very long or for a year or more, then you're going to have to take some sort of a scratcher, weeder tool, or similar and loosen up the roots, you know, if they're going round and round inside the pot, so that they can spread out. And because they've been in the pot where it's pretty easy to water them, or Mother Nature has been, when you put them in the ground, their roots aren't going to, they will start to spread, they will start to grow again, you know, and this scratching them up with a weeder or something like that stimulates root growth. But then you're going to have to be providing, more carefully providing them with water, and probably staking the tree too so it doesn't tip over. So you don't want it to be loose in the hole moving back and forth, so then it might dry out on one side if wind is blowing or something like that too.
Okay, well, thanks very much.
Okay, good enough. Good luck. Hopefully the tree gets moved successfully.
All right. Thank you, Craig. Cool. Well, thanks for that call there, and it's always good to be able to take advantage of the huge breadth of expertise in our master gardener, Ed Bajarski. Thank you for that, Ed.
Okay, you're very welcome. Yeah, I know. I've got, in fact, they're supposed to be delivering me some shrubs tomorrow from the barge that I'm going to be planting next week. So it is a good time of year to be planting. The ground is warm as we're likely to get, at least at this point.
Yeah.
Which is a plus. And the roots are still actively growing, and plants are actively growing. So if they're potted stuff, yes, plant them. And if you want to be digging things up and moving, at least wait till cloudy and or rainy weather. And if you can wait until, you know, like late September or something for the trees, then that tends to be better for them. If you're just moving an existing tree from one place to another.
Right. And so the reasoning there is that because the energy has been redirected, the nutrients and whatnot, into the roots are just a little more resilient, more able to sustain the tree in its new place despite even suffering damage.
Yes. And again, it's going to be less of a shock because that tree just can't, because you've cut roots, the tree can't keep those nice green leaves that you have on it now, that we have on them now.
Right.
Can't keep them, nice and plump and green, that they're going to wilt in response.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to happen because of the root damage.
Mm-hmm.
So if the leaves have dropped off them or are turning color, then that's going to be better for the tree overall and less of a shock. And then there will still be growing roots. As long as the ground isn't frozen, the tree may still be growing roots this fall, even after you transplant it.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly if you put a couple inches of bark mulch on the surface over them to keep the ground from freezing longer.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll wake up and hopefully take off in the spring at the right time.
Do you want to do anything like to sort of feed the hole with fertilizer where you're putting in this new tree, or
not at this time of year? Normally not. We usually don't put much of that this fall if the tree is going to be moved, if say you're putting in a new tree that's in a pot.
Mm-hmm.
You want to at least loosen things up and make sure you've got good drainage there. But you're better off putting something like compost on the surface, and maybe later on this fall, put some seaweed on the surface.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that stuff will be slowly leached down, and the nutrients from those will be leached down into the soil around the roots by Mother Nature's rains.
There you go. Yeah. That makes sense. Cool. Well, yeah, it's nice to have a call. And, so maybe we'll recap with some of our week-by-week goodies for this week. So we want to have people keeping an eye on their containers and hanging baskets during this little sort of hot streak here. And this is, given the rains that we've had throughout basically all of January and July-October, we can pretty much assume that a lot of nutrients have been leached out of hanging baskets and containers. And so when you're doing a little watering in the sunshine or during our, as things dry out a little bit, now that summer has arrived this week, it's a good time to restore some nutrients to those containers. So that's one thing. And let's see, what else did we talk? Oh, yeah, planting for your fall
yeah,
goodies.
Yeah, don't stop planting.
Don't stop planting, right. Plan for your goodies, your fall, your late fall, your winter crops. And keep an eye on your garlic. And while the sun's shining and it's doing its thing, you know, would you advise people nowadays that if they have garlic and it's still in the ground, it's, you know, it could sort of be harvested any time, but as long as it's sunny and dry, let it keep doing its thing. And then as soon as we see rain in the forecast, maybe pop out there and get those guys out, do you think?
I would say so, yes. Yes. And again, like we gave suggestions before, at the bottom two or three or four leaves are turning brown already. It's time to get it out of the ground. So.
Right. Yep. Right. So those browning leaves, those are probably the ones most connected to sort of like the outer skins of the...
Yes, exactly. Yep.
Right. So as those start to go, it's time. Yeah. But if those are just green at all or yellowing just faintly, then let the sun do its work. It's just going to make for bigger cloves, maybe more flavorful goodness.
Yes, indeed. That's what we want.
Cool. Well, those have been some great tips, and maybe we'll leave it there for this week, but we'll pick it up next week. We'll be happy to tell you how the garden tour goes this Saturday. Can't believe the weather. Maybe next year we'll do a garden tour in June, and then in July, and then again in August, just because the whole ecosystem conspired to make our garden tour really fantastic this weekend. It's sunny in the forecast, but we're going to hit up a lot of great spots around town. We're starting at the community garden, then we're going over to Tana Parker's backyard farm, going over to Jim Cariello's greenhouses. Roseanne Dunham is showing us her backyard wonderland. We're checking out a new hoop house, freshly built and provided through some sort of grant funding, and we're going to learn about that. We're going to check out an operation that was recently licensed to commercially cultivate cannabis. So we'll kind of take turns in a tightly legally regulated thing and go check out some really fascinating hydroponic agricultural situations there. And then we'll end up over at the flower farm, basking in the glow of those flower-packed greenhouses, and it should just be a wonderful, wonderful tour through a variety of types of Petersburg gardens and picnic along the way. And if anybody out there is overwhelmed with excitement at the prospect of what I've just listed, I think I have just a few spots left on the school bus, so you'll want to call me this afternoon to get in on that. But should be a real treat, and looking forward to, you know, digesting everything we eat along the way and learn from everybody in the community. It's
all right.
Fun.
Sounds like a great time, Oren.
Yeah. Well, one of these years we'll get you back down here to lead the tour too, because that
okay,
was a treat
sure.
back then too. So,
all right. Sounds
we'll
good.
Put that one on the radar.
Okay.
Let's just do that next year. All right, I'm
okay,
deciding we're going to
sure.
try to do that next year.
Sounds good.
Cool.
I'm game. So, yeah, July or August sounds good.
Excellent. Okay. Well, we'll leave it there. This has been In the Garden with Master Gardener Ed Byarski. Great day out there, everyone. I hope you spend lots of time these coming evenings and on the weekend doing a lot of good work in your gardens. Thank you again, Ed. I'll let you get back to work. I'm sure you're busy, too.
All right, yes. Thanks, Aaron.
Okay,
till next week.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, In the Garden, Master Gardener Ed Byarski and me, Aaron. Thank you to the Flower Farm, busting out with dahlias and colorful cut flowers to brighten your day. Subscriptions available for yourself or as a special gift. Plus perennials, trees, shrubs, dirt, and mulching bark. And their greenhouses are open and ready for your visit. Lots of amazing flowers out there to enjoy. At 6 Rory Road, Papke's Landing, every day but Wednesday. They're at 772-3464.
Homegrown tomatoes. What would life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy.
It'll be high country music next until 4 o'clock, then it's All Things Considered. And KFSK News at 4:30.
Nothing a homegrown tomato won't cure. Put them in a salad, put them in a stew. You can make your very own tomato juice. You can eat them with eggs, you can eat them with gravy. Eat them with beans, pinto or navy. Put them on a side, put them in the middle. Put a homegrown tomato on a hot cake griddle.
Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What would life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.